basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And a sad morning today as we get the news that Rui Hachimura signs crosstown with the LA Clippers. 2 years, $28 million with a team option in year two. D, what's your reaction to the news?
When I first saw this, I had a couple of thoughts. My first was, oh, good for Rui. I'm glad he sort of landed on his feet in this way. I was actually worried that he might not approach an MLE-level salary just based off of what was out there and what teams were out there. We are like far enough into free agency now that the moratorium's about to get lifted and the deals that have been reported are about to become finalized. And this is the part of the year where money starts to dry up or teams start to become a little bit more targeted. So I was happy for Rui. Happy he gets to stay in LA even and like not have to move and all of the stuff that comes with uprooting your life when you're a professional athlete and you get traded or you're a free agent or whatever. The other part of me is just like, oh, damn, I hate it that he's going to be Clippers Pete. It's like one of the things that you had said in our last conversation where Rui came up was like, Rui's a Laker, you know, and for all of his flaws or whatever, and I think we could be critical of him in ways that I honestly think you become critical of players in a certain way when you have an affinity for them and you just want some of the other stuff to like not be there anymore because you're just like, oh, I really want to see the best version of you. And I felt like that about Rui, and I would have loved to have had him back, honestly, even at this number. I think the Lakers could have ultimately gotten to this sort of cap space, but it's pretty clear to me, Pete, that they were moving on pretty intentionally from a lot of last year's team. And we'll get to that in a little bit when we expand this conversation. But where was your head at?
Yeah, it's not where my head's at. It's where my heart's at. That was the same reaction. Some of my fondest memories of the 2020s involve Rui in some way, shape, or form post-championship, right? Just the last several years with him, the acquisition before the trade deadline in 23, the run-up to the playoffs, then that Memphis series in the first round where Memphis is like, you know, we're not going to guard this guy. We don't think he's going to be a three-point shooter. Little did they know, in a couple of years, he'd be statistically the greatest three-point shooter in playoff history. And him going crazy, him dunking all over Jaren Jackson Jr., him hugging Austin after the I'm him moment. That's one of the classic visuals to me of that year. And just working for the team during that time too. He was just a good dude, one of those people that everybody loves. So I'm going to miss him quite a bit. And for him to go to the Clippers definitely hurts. I understand it, right? I understand the moving on, not just from Rui, but that whole group that started 3-0 against Houston, they're all gone. Kennard, Smart, LeBron, DA, Jackson's gone. Now Rui as well. Just, we've got ourselves a completely new era of Lakers basketball.
We do. It's funny right there where when you were cycling through the memories, there are all these other little moments that I remember of Rui. The game winner against Toronto this year pops in my head when LeBron slings it to Rui in the corner. LeBron famously like sitting on 8 points or whatever, and his double digit scoring streak is about to come to an end. Possibly he has the chance to shoot a game winning shot. Instead, he drives and kicks to Rui in the corner. Rui gets mobbed and he's just smiling and laughing it up and just so happy. And then LeBron is sort of drifting, but has his hands up in sort of celebration as well. And the LeBron-Rui partnership of size and athleticism and like a big forward, I always thought that there was some symmetry there between those two guys. And it sort of sucks to lose both of them in the same offseason, Pete. I always sort of envisioned that if LeBron were to go, that Rui was going to slide back into that starting power forward slot where he'd proven very effective and very helpful in those sort of personnel groupings. But I think the front office has said, you know what? The previous era of team, it wasn't good enough. And We had all of these guys on the roster except for Ayton and Kennard. But that version of like the LeBron, Rui, Jackson, that version, that group's been here for 3 years as like core players, right? Two starting level guys, LeBron obviously a cornerstone player and a team superstar, and Jackson as the primary backup for several years now. That group wasn't good enough in terms of being able to put the team in position to be a contender. And there's a ton of reasons for that and a ton of factors for that. But this isn't coming from any reporting or insider conversations I've had with anyone. It just feels like it was a very conscious decision to say, we're moving on from that era. This is Luka's team. Austin's really the only holdover that we really want. And we are going in this entirely new direction. And there isn't a bridge from the previous seasons to this upcoming season beyond Austin. This is a Luka Doncic team, and it's a new ownership group. And you can say it in any way you want, Pete, but it seems pretty intentional to me.
As I've been saying on this pod for a very long time, the summer of 26 was circled for, one, the year that they move on from LeBron, and the year that they totally revamped the team. And now that's reality. Even then, though, I am surprised the degree to which there is no bridge, the degree to which it really is an entirely new team outside of Luka and Austin. And so let's go to an early break here. And when we come back, I want to talk about what might happen next. So, Dee, one thing I think to keep an eye on that's an objective measure to see kind of what the Lakers are working on is, who do the Lakers officially sign, or do they officially trade DeAndre Ayton for Jaden Hardy? They'll announce that on their social media when they do, but they are not allowed to until it is official with the league. I know this from firsthand experience. There are a lot of machinations, and let's try our best to not make this too eyes glaze over in the minutia type of thing, but how the Lakers move from here in terms of who they sign and actually acquire sort of presents different paths for them depending on whether they do that or not.
I'm going to make two very quick and easy points, and I think that this will help guide this conversation. What will happen first is the Lakers will renounce all of their free agents in order to become a cap space team. And then they will trade Ayton for Hardy, which basically allows them to re-aggregate Hardy in a trade, because all you have to do is be under the cap when the trade happens in order to be able to re-aggregate him right away. The Lakers will then proceed with all of their signings except for Austin, or Austin will go last. And basically that will be the order of operations. One of the things that happened when I was doing the math on all the Lakers signings is it didn't add up based off of the amount of money that was reported and the amount of cap space the Lakers actually had. They were honestly about $500K over. And I was just like, I don't know how all of this salary is going to fit into the Lakers cap space. And it turns out it wouldn't have. And so that's where the Ayton trade comes in. They save about $2 million in swapping out Ayton for Hardy. And that's why it will be first. And then by the end of the Lakers signings, I think that they will have had basically about $1.5 million in cap space. And then what comes next, Pete, is all of the tradable players that are on their roster and then how that's going to work and whether or not they're able to make any additional moves.
Would it be better for them to operate as an under the cap team to make those trades or an over the cap? They couldn't go under the cap, right, and still sign all of the guys if they were to take back more money than they were sending out, right?
When it comes to the ability to take back money in a trade or what's most beneficial to them, it actually has more to do with whether or not they're under or over the first apron and whether or not they're sending out more or less than $29 million. Those are the markers within the CBA. As I've read these provisions and understand them, that would impact how much money the Lakers can take back. Like if you're over the first apron, you can only take back like 125%. If you're under the first apron, you can take back the full amount of what you're sending out plus like $8.5 million is basically the formula. My eyes are already starting to glaze over getting into minutia, Pete. So we don't need to dive into it much more than that. Like I said, I expect Ayton to get traded, all of the free agent signings to happen, for Austin's deal and Sexton's deal to be the last ones, because Sexton's going to be signed with the room exception. After that, it's more about they're not an apron team and can they execute trades with the players that they want to trade and the draft capital that they have to trade to attach to those players.
And they still have a good deal of work to do, right? And one of the names that they've been tied to, they need a starting forward. And there have been rumors about Kuminga. Peyton Watson's still out there. I don't expect him, but Lakers need a starting forward to start next to Luka. And my question is, for Kuminga, for example, how could that even work if they wanted to, let's say he could get $10 million. I do not know what his market is, so let's just use that as a reference point. Would that need to be the type of thing where the Lakers trade, either in a sign-in trade? It's like with Atlanta, we get Kuminga, they get Jake and Dalton, I think adds up to roughly that type of salary for Kuminga. Would they have to trade them elsewhere and then sign him as a free agent? How would that sort of have to look?
Either of those could work, honestly. If the Lakers were to try to sign Kuminga with cap space, then they would create additional cap space by trading players into another team's cap space or salary cap exception, and or they might waive and stretch Vando, who's got the most salary owed left in terms of tradable guys that are on the team. And they would create salary cap space, and then they would sign Kuminga into that space, into the same order of operations that exists when they're signing Quentin Grimes and Mamu. If they wanted to execute a trade for Kuminga, they could actually send out, I think, as little money as like Jake or even Hardy in the deal and take back even more than $10 million for Kuminga. The thing is, with a sign-and-trade contract has to at least be 3 seasons, but teams finagle that by making years 2 and 3 like player options, or year 2 is a player option, year 3 is a team option, or whatever. Like, they don't have to
non-guaranteed years,
yada, 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 right? But basically, that's what I would expect to happen if it was Kuminga, because he's a free agent. I will say, though, Pete, that Kuminga is not the only target out there for the Lakers. They also need to sign a backup center. The backup center market is thin in terms of free agents. Like, I would much rather go into the marketplace and try to trade for a backup center personally. What is that going to cost and all of that? And I would even argue that they need another like rotation level wing player. Somebody
guard the ball.
Yeah. Someone who could like start in front of Grimes potentially. So when you talk about there being work to do, yeah, man, there's like a lot of work to do. And the Lakers have Hardy's $6 million contract. They've got Laravia's $6 million contract. Now, I will say, like, Laravia could very well be on the team and retain a role as, like, the 8th or 9th guy in the rotation, and they got 82 games out of him last year. I think that he's a viable guy to slide back into the rotation now. But Hardy, Laravia, they've got Vando's contract, and they've got Dalton. I'm putting Bronny to the side here. Those are the 4 guys that the Lakers have to go out into the marketplace with and say, does anyone want to make a trade with us? And they've got those 4 players, and they've got 3 second round draft picks, and they've got a pick swap, and I believe 2032. And to me, that's what they're sort of going to the grocery store with and saying, like, what can we do with this?
And I think to the average fan, that's going to sound like, what the hell are you going to get for any of those guys, right? That's not something that's super appealing to a bunch of other teams on their surface, but every player that the Lakers have, you can even throw a do into this as well. They are on expiring contracts with the exception of Vando. Now, when we talk about being able to aggregate Hardy's contract, that means to be able to trade him and another player in the same trade. And so that can't happen if the Lakers sign all of their guys and become an over-the-cap team. If Hardy's still on the team at that point, there's a 2-month restriction on when he can be traded. So that's part of the reason why I suspect they'll at least keep a little bit of cap space and somebody unsigned, and very curious to see what goes through officially there. But this is the part of the offseason where the Lakers are in the market for someone who's on a contract that their team wants to get out of for whatever reason or another. Christian Brown and P.J. Washington, God, I hope we can make a trade with Dallas, because P.J. Washington would be freaking great at that starting forward spot next to Luka. But those are the types of guys, D, that when you talk about why the heck would any of those players have trade value, that's part of the reason why. And the Lakers can take back more money, I think, than people realize in trades. So let's go to break here. I want to come back, just get your thoughts on, just from a pure salary standpoint, how much money could the Lakers take back?
So in terms of what can the Lakers get back using some of this salary as ballast, the rules are set up where there's essentially 3 buckets, and it's based off of how much money you're sending out. If you're sending out less than $7.25 million, if you're sending out between $7.25 and $29 million, and if you're sending out more than $29 million in salary. So let's start with that lowest bucket, the $7.25 million because the Lakers have two guys that we just talked about in Jaden Hardy and Jake LaRavia who make $6 million. So a real world example would be if the Lakers are trading out Hardy, they could take back double Hardy's salary plus $250,000. So Hardy makes $6 million, they could take back up to $12,250,000 back. If they were going to trade Vando, Vando's in the next level up, right? Because he makes more than $7.25 million, but he makes less than $29 million. They could take 100% of Vando's salary back, which is like $12.2 million, plus $8.5 million more, right? So they could take back essentially, just let's round it up, like $20.7 million or something like that back. And so this is where the Lakers could be helpful to teams who might be trying to get off of money, but are trying to maybe get a player back who could be useful to them or could be just a roster spot for them. But while the Lakers are taking back much more salary back and saying, no, we're helping you by saving you $6 million under the first apron or to get you out from the first apron to being a non-apron team or getting you out of the second apron. And I think that this is where the Lakers could be beneficial to certain teams who might be trying to get off of money or basically just save money in general. And so that's where I sort of see the Lakers' value being. And they can incentivize with like, and here's a second round pick for your trouble as well, or 2 second round picks or whatever it takes in order to make a deal.
So that 20.7 that you talked about with Vando going out, that gets you into that Cameron Johnson, Christian Brown type of range. We don't know all of the teams that are trying to get off money, but the one that seems most obvious is Denver. I think if you did the math on them re-signing Peyton Watson and they want to bring back Spencer Jones as well, the degree that he would cost in terms of them going into the second apron, I'm of the opinion that they likely have to get out of money. I don't know if there are other teams, whether it's Cleveland possibly making space for LeBron or what it could look like, but I don't think they're the only team in that range. So this is where the Lakers are going to be operating from here on out and where we should be looking in the trade machine for what teams have players in these different price range that, yeah, anybody under $7.25 million, so that's Jake and Hardy both make the same amount, both make $6 million. Double that, add $250,000 individually, you could get that level of player. That can get you a really good backup center. We were talking earlier about Kuminga possibly starting at $10 million if you wanted to start him at $12,250,000, but the Lakers aren't done and it's not hopeless, right? I felt like after the Kessler sign-in trade, then the three free agent signings, there's a certain amount of Lakers have no flexibility and nowhere to go from here. And that's just not true. I do think that where LeBron lands, what happens with Watson and Denver and all of that are sort of the holdups. And I think that there needs to be movement on that before anything goes down. But like Lakers do have some opportunity here.
They do have some opportunity. And I'm looking at Denver, I'm looking at Cleveland, I'm looking at what happens with Kuminga, and I'm still looking at OKC as teams where I'm just like, okay, well, what's going to happen with these specific players and or teams? Cleveland, if they're really going to make a push for LeBron, they have to figure something out with both Max Strus and Dennis Schroeder. That's just well known at this point by reading everyone that I read and who I'm trying to keep up with in terms of like what the smart cap people are saying about what the Cavs would need to do in order to offer LeBron like a real salary and not just like, okay, you have to take the minimum with us. In terms of Denver, you laid it out well. They're already projected to be into the second apron without signing either of their restricted free agents. They could create some space by waiving Valanciunas, who has a $10 million contract for next season, but only $2 million of that is guaranteed. That guarantee date, I think, is either today or tomorrow. So we should learn more about what's going to happen with Valanciunas very soon. And then I'm still looking at OKC. I haven't closed out the idea of like what's going to happen with Lu Dort. Is Lu Dort going to get traded still? I also haven't closed the door on whether or not they're going to potentially trade Jalen Williams, the big, the backup center. OKC, they obviously brought back Hartenstein. Chet plays center for them at times. They used the 12th pick in the draft on Dave Mara. They used a first round pick last season on Thomas Sorber, who is also a center, tore his ACL before the season and didn't play a game. But I know you loved Sorber coming out of the draft. He's our guy, Mike Garcia. He's one of his faves as well. And then they've got Jalen Williams. Like, I know the league's bigger and getting bigs and having big depth is important. Are they going to carry five guys who can play center on a team that's into the second apron? I don't know. Maybe they will. But that seems like a misallocation of resources for a smart basketball team. So I'm just keeping that out there as well. So there's still movement to happen. And I expect the Lakers to be scouring the league. Like you mentioned, PJ Washington. Go around the league and be like, okay, well, what is this team trying to do? And are they trying to win? Are they trying to have a $20 million player on their roster for this long? Because in theory, for a player like PJ Washington, the Lakers could trade out $12 million of salary and get back a player of PJ Washington's salary slot. And I'm not saying Dallas wants to save money right now, and that would be their only goal, but the Lakers, I'm sure, are active in seeking out guys like this.
Well, in Dallas's circumstance, they drafted Flagg, number one overall last year, who plays Washington's position. And then they draft Morez Johnson, who's a 4-5 as well, with the ninth pick this year. And there was already a glut of personnel at that spot. That doesn't mean they're going to be doing backflips to trade him to the Lakers, right? But sometimes teams just need to balance out their rotation, where it's like, we have too many players that played this position, like you were laying out with the OKC center spot, and we want to be able to convert that into a shooting guard because we've got a hole right there. So we're far from the only team right now that's looking at their roster going, what the heck are we going to do? Minnesota doesn't have a starting power forward right now, for example.
Yeah, that's why they were rumored to be in the mix for Rui, and they've been making a push to try to sign LeBron James. This is why I'm still out there looking at Cam Johnson. The latest reports I read from both Mark Stein and Jake Fisher was that they were rebuffing stuff when it came to trading Cam Johnson. I heard no such rebuffs about Christian Brown, who's under a long-term contract, I believe, through like 2031 or something like that. Like, his extension's kicking in now. So,
and Washington's on a long contract, too. Those are some of the types of contracts people are going to be more enthusiastic about moving.
Yes, particularly if they have alternatives on their roster. So another thing pointing towards a PJ Washington move, and not towards the Lakers, mind you, just him potentially being traded, is that Najee Marshall is in the last year of his contract with Dallas. And he, to me, is a better complementary fit next to Flagg than PJ Washington is long term. If they want to keep Marshall beyond this year, maybe they'd rather pay Najee Marshall than pay PJ Washington. And so remains to be seen what's going to happen. But today's the day I expect there to be all of the flurry of signings becoming official and teams putting out the content of dudes in their own jersey and welcome letters and everything else, right? It's just like all the social media stuff that you used to look at before it got posted is going to be out there now for everyone to consume. And it's like signing day for NBA teams. But in the next two or three days is when I expect in earnest for more of the second and third wave of moves to start to happen. Summer League in Vegas is going to start soon. That's another like great opportunity for executives to sort of all be in the same place and break bread together and get a few drinks and hammer out some deals. So I just expect more movement to come soon, Pete.
I hope so. I think the two things that can hold that up is LeBron choosing, simply because the teams that LeBron doesn't pick will then move on to their next plan type of thing. But they're going to wait for LeBron to decide on that if they think that they're in the mix on that. And then what happens with Watson, although that's a little bit blurrier on that front. So let's hope that we get some more movement. But I do think a couple of dominoes might have to fall there. All right, we'll wrap up here. If nothing Lakers related breaks, tomorrow we're going to cover the start of Summer League. Cameron Carr looking great to start out. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left.
That
next
to
the winner. It's on the way.
Good! Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell. There's the move. Two, one. Miss it. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.